It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, we're getting thunderstruck. Let me tell you, something you need to know. Okay. I mean, this is kind of where you're going to get this stuff other than freedomsphoenix.com. And where do we have to go for this stuff? We're going to Canada Free Press. We're going to Canada to get this. Here you go. You ready? You hear this on the news a lot, did you? Citibank needs 7 days. Late last week, a slight furor arose when it became public knowledge that Citibank sent the following notice to customers. Effective April 1st, 2010, we reserve the right to require 7 days advance notice before permitting a withdrawal from all checking accounts. While we do not currently exercise this right and have not exercised it in the past, we are required by law to notify you of this change. In my opinion, this was not just a notice about Citibank or Citigroup. It was a notice to people that to take up to 7 days to clear a check or to give you all the money in your checking account if you demanded it. Here we go. Called bank holidays. 7 days notice. I get 7 days to give you your money. Now, there's, they call different kinds of money different things. And a checking account is demand deposit accounts or DDAs, okay? This is, this is a demand deposit. I give it to you on the condition that is mine. I get it when I want it. Give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. Well, I guess there's a banking rule, law, something in there. They can take up to 7 days to clear a check. They got to notice you. They just say, hey, we're not doing it. But, the law says that we have to notice you, so we're noticing you in case we have to do it. Not that we're doing it. Okay, so what does that mean? What's coming? I don't know. Got, chickens! I mean, seriously. I bring that up a lot. I wanted to ingrain that in your head. You're going to be responsible for sustaining your own life with food. All this is going to come down to just eating. You want to know how desperate people get, stop feeding them and find out what happens. So I'm, a lot of things to be worried about. I mean, we got all kinds of stuff on Freedom's Phoenix. The Army awarding big, giant KBR contracts. It's all kinds of more shenanigans going on there. Citibank doing this thing. The money supply is grinding to a halt. Now, which should have happened a long time ago. But now it's like they get you set up for the reaping. Right when you can't think it's going to possibly get any worse, they make it worse. And then doing what they should have done a long time ago anyway. But I don't know where we go from here. I'll tell you why. Back when I first started becoming aware of how corrupt the government was, I was a young man. I was in my late 20s. I just had my fourth child. It's 1988. Daddy Bush had just taken over. Here comes bad guys. They passed laws that, made it very – I just happened to read this one law called the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act. And all it was the New World Order and how we're going to get rich on we get our cut regardless of how money moves in. Now the country goes here, over there, we get our cut because we can get our cut. We voted to get our cut, we got our cut. So I could see in the law, what it was. It was they created all these hurdles and every single one of them was a cash machine for their buddies. Well, of course, you didn't think that they left out the banking system. Heck, that was the base of the whole thing. So, you know, I'm rather than saving the future for our grandchildren, as the president himself seems to think it means, it appears to be a code word for delivering public monies into private hands and raising taxes on the already squeezed middle class. This is what Jack was talking about. Ellen Brown, IMF-style austerity measures come to America. That's the title of it. What they're doing is, you know, we're having the forced savings account. Because why? Think about it for a second. Why do they do this? You ready? Because they can. See, you try, you sit there and do the mental gymnastics, and you're going, because they wanted to turn the dot. They got all kinds of excuses. But, you know, who comes out ahead on this thing? You know, they do. And they do it because they can. There's a lot of other news going on. There's a lot of interesting things I'd really like to, you know, get into. But, you know, I mean, but it's just, it's all hypocrisy. I'll just give you some of the tips of the iceberg here. This is a good month to buy a Toyota. Toyota will roll out an aggressive incentive program for U.S. consumers in March, including 0% financing for 5 years and 2-year free maintenance. The new incentives will start Tuesday and run through March. Come as the world's biggest automaker on the heels of blah, 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 all the stuff that's going on. They'll do this. A lot of people will be going, right on. They like Toyotas anyway. But what's happened with General Motors? They're doing a recall of, finally, you know, they mentioned these other guys. You know, I was shocked that they did this. General Motors is recalling 1.3 million vehicles over steering problems. They've had 14 crashes and an injury. They have, 905,000 Cobalt models have to be brought in for this. You know, there's all these people. There's like, I think it was, I read the story, it was like 1,100 people who was writing a complaint. Hey, man, got a problem with the brakes or acceleration? How about steering? I vote steering problems, man. That's right up there, too. So where do we go with all this? Who do we trust? What do we, you know, it's going to come down to brand. It's going to come down to, you know, innovation. It's going to come down to, you know, people taking care of business. Is, you know, Toyota handling this well? You know, then there's innovation. These are the things that we were talking about yesterday, all the different innovations that, you know, inventions and stuff that come out. And I'm of the opinion, if you just leave it alone, this stuff happens on its own anyway, for the right reasons. Because it, you know, increases performance. And I remember, before I get into this story, I'll tell you this. I used to read science magazines a lot, and now it's just propaganda, you know, and every now and then I'll pick one up. But the one thing that I found of interest is that there would be a lot of new innovations that I would wait probably at most 5 years, 5-7 years of something really big, complicated, whatever. A lot of times, heck, that next Christmas, 3 years, 3 to 5 years on average. I mean, anything that I could think of, you know, if I just thought of it, it was like I was wishing it into existence. If you can think of something, wouldn't it be nice to, boom, there it is. There's a market for it because things are getting cheaper. You know, now when you write a book, they do it, you know, like per book. You know, I don't have to order 10,000 books anymore or 5,000. I can order 200 at a time in hard copy. Now get my own book published for the same cost as, you know, having to do 5,000. They call it on-demand publishing. All of a sudden, that opens up enormous opportunities for people to have their own vanity book. Hey, you want a book? I got myself a book. Got it all nice and embossed here, gold lettering, everything. Cost me, you know, maybe a few dollars more a piece that I did it in a low number than doing it. You know, cool, done. Well, that applies to everything. So I remember seeing all kinds of stuff. I mean, really cool stuff. You know, I'll give you some cool stuff. You know, a lot of you guys like this kind of cool technology stuff, and I'll pull it up in the break, some things, and really explain some things. Let me write that down, man. 3D printer. That would just be, you won't even believe it. And this has been going on for years. 15-year-old kids are having businesses doing this stuff. Well, I would see this kind of stuff coming up, and I give you an example. Batmobile. I mean, back in the 60s, Batman, right? Turbines of speed. And then off he'd go. Well, what was that? It was a gas turbine. It was a cruise missile engine. You know, it was a modern equivalent of that. And it powered at a high efficiency using gas, gasoline, or where it was to make the turbine go. It's like a little jet engine. And it would pick the right speed to have the most efficient burn. And all it did was power a generator or an alternator. It would power an electric motor. So the Batmobile turbines the speed. The Batmobile was electric. So I'm going, okay, they have that now? Yes, they had it back in the 80s, early 90s. You know, Honda and BMW and all these guys are going gas turbine engines that they weren't go to the drive shaft. You know, they would go to power electric motors, and then you had storage, and then you had... So they, I'm going, wow, man, this stuff should be coming, man, rock and roll. That's cool. They had it. Garrett, it was an aerospace company here that became Honeywell bottom out. They had a big 18-wheeler. They put one of these gas turbines in. It's pulling big, giant 18-wheel trailers testing up mountain roads here. People are going, what the heck was that? You know where that engine came from? It was the loser for the M1 tank. And he said, yeah, we can do this now. Now it's 20 years later, they're finally starting to do it. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance, my friend. It's the same old story, same old story,
same old song and dance all the time. Same old, same old, same old, same old. You know what the biggest repression on all the goodies? I mean, goodies. I want some goodies, man. You know, make my life easier. Make my cars faster. You know, make my TVs brighter. You know, make my life easier. Make my garden greener. Make my chickens healthier. I mean, all this stuff is out there, and government's got, they're always trying to protect me from something. You know, what they're, it's an excuse to take more money from is what it is. I, you know, where's that protection from them? You know, where does that happen? That was what the Bill of Rights is supposed to be. That's what the Constitution is supposed to do. How's that working out for us? So it's just this collectivization of giving them some kind of authority, which is what's doing it to me. But you anarchist? Compared to what? Compared to this, I vote anarchy. Anarchy, none. None of the above. I vote none. None, 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 none. I got to vote. I vote none. Do I get none on there? That's one thing. Why I did not participate in the Continental Congress. I went to Jekyll Island. You know, Bob Schultz, he really wanted me to participate in this, get the revolution represented and everything. I'll go talk to y'all. So I go there and did, you know, my spiel and, you know, said my piece and, you know, word up. I'm glad you guys are doing something. But I wouldn't participate in the National Continental Congress. We had Michael Badnarik on. We had Ed Vallejo, which was the Ron Paul representative meetups and stuff here. He went. And Howard Blitz, which is one of our columnists from Yuma, he went. And I felt we were well represented. There was no reason I had to go. But I just couldn't. I go, is there going to be an option for none of the above? Is there an option for me to vote no plan, no constitution, no, you know, just the states, just, is that an option? Whether I vote for it or not, that's not even the point. If I don't have the option of saying, you know, none of this anymore, then what kind of vote is that? I go, I just want the option. Will I vote for that? I don't know. It depends what you come up with. Can I vote none of the above? No. Well, I go, well, I have no desire to go then. But we need what? You want me to get there and go sanction some kind of central plan, you know, in Washington, D.C., right? I mean, that's what you're going to, that's your ultimate goal, right? Okay. Well, if I don't have the option to vote none, then why am I going? Well, we got a good idea. Yeah, but it's your idea. You know, what if I don't like it? You know, what if I vote, you know, none's better than whatever it is that you got? See, so that's, I just, you know, give me the option of none. Whenever you have an election, in the Libertarian Party, you're doing it. NOTA is always a candidate. NOTA, none of the above. So there's always NOTA's get, you know, somebody's always voting NOTA, just so NOTA gets one. Out of principle, NOTA. We had a lot of guys here, they always NOTA. Well, I thought you like, yeah, but, you know, NOTA's got to get a vote. That's what they would do. Well, I'm, you know, a lot of social and economic engineering coming in and what we drive, what we do, what how our engines are, all the, and you know, with this innovation, I used to think as a kid when I'd see these gas turbine engine, all the cruise missile engines, they'd take, they'd mass produce them by the gazillions. You know, okay, they could get really cheap. Then they produce efficiently a lot of electricity because they run at a certain optimal speed and then generate electricity, put in a motor, rock and roll. Well, I go, what if you just added it as a booster? What if you just, you know, want to hot rod your thing? You don't need to get a blower. You need to get an electric motor. You need to get a hybrid. Put it in the trunk, whatever. Turbines of speed. Batman. Porsche unveils green supercar. Supercar for petrol heads. Porsche unveiled a futuristic hybrid supercar this week that it claims can hit 100 kilometers now, about 60 miles an hour, in 3.2 seconds, while emitting just a tiny fraction of the carbon put out by most sports cars. This, and it goes on and on and on. What it is, it's the 918 Spider prototype. Is a German car maker's offering to the growing market for hybrid cars that combine an internal combustion engine with electric propulsion, dramatically slashing the amount of greenhouse gases that the car emits. Now, how do they do this? I don't know. It goes on and this stuff. It doesn't matter. It's electric motors. They're added to, they're starting to do it because they can. They're getting more efficient. You know, it's not, you know, because they want to be green and they get, you know, it's a performance enhancement for a sports car. You know, the Tesla, what do you think that is? You put in T-E-S-L-A, Tesla Motors. They got, you know, Jay Leno's buying these sports cars. They go 0 to 60, 3 point whatever seconds, and it's all electric. They're starting to use laptop batteries. You know, they put them in, they look a little, you know, AAA battery or AA battery. You know, there's a whole bunch of them. They're in sequence. You know, they got to, well, make sure they don't blow up, make sure they're vented, make sure they, you know, whatever. And they get these little battery packs. They put them in there, charge, how long does it take to charge them? Then they're going to a different. Then it'll just be, once you have the design of the car, there's only two things that you upgrade. I mean, other than just regular, you know, I want a nice little spoiler and put better tires and wheels and whatever. What you need is you just need a battery and the motor. Well, the motors are often the hubs. The actual wheels themselves become part of the motor. You know, the sitting there rotor thing, that becomes, and then when you stop, you start to brake, it turns into a generator, and the resistance helps slow you down. It's like downshifting, and it's charging the battery back up. You know, they got this stuff now. Okay? All-wheel drive, electric motors, self-charging, charging braking. You know, what's to stop it? In fact, General Motors, before all this stuff, I don't even know if they do it anymore. I can probably type it in here. It's called Skateboard. What it was is they did everything by wire. When you steer, you have linkage that goes down to a steering box and power steering and make go, turn, whatever. You know, a lot of these futuristic television shows or movies, you'll see them in this iRobot with Will Smith. You know, the car drives itself, you know, manual, and then here comes the steering wheel up and you can drive. All that's fly-by-wire. It's like the F-16 fighter jet. You know, there's no real linkage that goes, you know, like a wire or a rod that goes to the aileron. It's electrical signals. I mean, you hope your computer doesn't screw up, and that's a whole other thing, you know. But they're starting to get to the point now that, you know, they're trusting it. I don't know how, you know, Toyota accelerator sticking thing and the GM Colt car, all of a sudden the power steering goes out. You know, is that a faulty wire? So you got other concerns, but the technology is there that you do a turn, and you can even get feedback. I remember them talking about this for years. They're going, yeah, you feel like you get resistance on the road. You feel, instead of it just being a video game, you actually get feedback in the steering wheel, and it's all just by wire. What does that allow you to do? It allows you to create a automobile platform that looks like a skateboard with four wheels, and you just plug in your chassis. You get, here it is. You know, the batteries are in the skateboard, the motors are in the wheels, and you can put whatever you want on it, and you know, plug it in. Have a nice day. You don't think that can be done? Hell, that's how they used to build cars. That's what, it's a doozy. You know what that means? Oh, that's a doozy. It's a Duesenberg. Duesenbergs were very expensive cars, and they just came as a platform. It was an engine, and it had a drivetrain in the wheel, and that was it. Done. And then that's why Duesenbergs are so unique in the way they look, and they're all, because they're all made individually by hand, by coachmakers, guys that used to make these expensive carriages and stuff. They just put it, okay, fine, you know, it's not pulled by a horse, it sits on this platform. Okay, good, I can do that. That's what they did. You know, ornate metal and woodwork and so on. It's a doozy. That's where that came from. That's what they're creating. Once they start creating mass production, it'll be like the VW Bug. All of a sudden you just unbolt, you know, the body, you take it off, you know, the platform, you just bolt it on. Well, that's what they're going to do. They're going to start creating these skateboards. And what they'll be is a car that will have nothing on it other than the propulsion system and the battery pack, and then you just plug in the aftermarket goodies. and do what? I have no idea. That's kind of the point. And if they're not going to do it, somebody else is going to do it. This is what's coming. And it's for performance. You know, imagine that, man. You crank up turbine to speed and punch it. And you got a battery electric motor assist. You know, I'll leave you in the dust. Not only do you need a big giant blower. That'd be Fast and the Furious. Ooh, think about that. Fast and the Furious. You know, it's a series of movies, a franchise. Oh, there's a race car with Vin Diesel in there doing it. All of a sudden, they're going to start bringing in electric hybrids and sell them. It'll be 007 will have the top-end sports car, and it's going to be electric. Don't think so? Wait, see. I'll bet you. Bet you.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, I'm here to help you. Just, you know, stop, take a break, then we'll see what's going down. You know, one thing, on a morning show tomorrow, we're having Heidi Byrick. We've had her on this show before, and I tell you, you know, remember when we had the Obama visit and we had our guns, black man with AR-15, you know, that was a big deal. And there was a reason why we did that, and it was because, you know, here they come, you know, the white supremacists and everything, because William Kostrick, a guy that brought a gun to a protest in New Hampshire, found out he was from Arizona. Oh, here we go. We're going to do Arizona again. We like doing Arizona. Because Napolitano, you know, is governor here. She's Homeland Security now. They know what's what, and they just, you know, make this stuff up as they go along. Heidi Byrick is special director for special projects for the Southern Poverty Law Center. So I could, she was behind. She's helped pushing this. Oh, we got a black president. Obviously, we got militias out there want to, you know, whatever. So had her on. She's going to come on tomorrow morning. And because last night on the Fox affiliate here, they did a big thing about the militia, the rise of the militia, they're rising up. Well, they talked to the county attorney's office in Mojave County in northwestern Arizona, where they're doing the story from. He had to go up there to find them. And they're legal. They can do what they want. They're not bothering anybody. I'm good. I don't have a problem. You know, so they're amping this up. Well, here it comes again. You know, they're because why? I don't know. We're going to find out tomorrow. So I got so much, you know, just bad news. But there's such good news out there. There's so much cool stuff going on. I'd rather focus on a lot of that stuff. I mean, of course, we'll have some fun here. We'll get, you know, guys coming in and explain what's what to us. Tomorrow afternoon on this show, I say for y'all, I got a guy from the CIA. You know, the CIA. Wait, what is today? Today is it's Thursday that he's coming on. I wrote a book about a bunch of the stuff that the CIA has been doing, and I don't want to spoil it for you, but Thursday, you know, tune in. We have some CIA behind the scenes. And when they write these books, they have to get permission. They're supposed to get clearance or whatever. I don't know how much clearance he got, but it's some controversial stuff, so we're going to be talking about that. Well, let's talk about some more goodies. Because this is inspirational. You know, these are things that, you know, I'll give you an example. First commercial 3D bioprinter fabricates organs to order. The problem with organ transplants is that the organ has to come from someone else. Since most people rather fancy their hearts and lungs, getting any organ other than a kidney usually requires the difficult combination of donor consent and timely death. In an attempt to circumvent that limitation, the engineering firm Invitec teamed up with the medical company Organovo to produce the first commercial 3D bioprinter. The device, which works like a 3D fabricator, builds organs up one layer of cells at a time. Instead of using melted plastic or ink, the printer uses different cells based on the recipient's own body, thus significantly lowering the chance of organ rejection. For some of the more complex organs, the printer lays the cells over a pre-made scaffold. The printer remains in an early testing phase, but Invitech and Organovo claim that the technology will advance far enough to print out arteries and veins for bypass surgery within 5 years, with complex organs like a heart or a liver possible within 10. Naturally, these companies created this device for the benefit of mankind and human health, but I'm looking forward to using it for the benefit of my taste buds. Perfectly marbled cut of bone and ribeye. I'll email you the specs. Just print it out when I'm done with my appetizer. What they don't tell you in here, we've done other stories. When was this from? This is from last December. They've already done this with tracheas and bladders. You know, people that needed to replace their trachea. This woman needed her trachea, you know, replaced. Another person needed a new bladder. What they do is they put, you know, different kind of cells, T cells, this cell, whatever cell, on a lattice structure. I mean, sometimes you have like a ball, like a bladder. You need some kind of a structure, a plastic thing, or something that dissolves. You know, when it goes in, it'll dissolve into the body. You know, later or even before you use it, and you coat it with these things. You kind of paint it on was one technique. The 3D printers, there's another one in here. Let me go in. And I put this stuff up. You go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see this afternoon's archive show. And I'll just put the links in there. You go in there, and you'll see this stuff, and you can go to it. Oh, this is another thing about printers. I want to tell you about that. I happen to come across that. But, oh, that's another bad guy thing. I'll tell you that in a little bit. What they do is 3D printing, it came to my attention when people started fabricating one of parts. I mean complex parts. You go to this one, it says 3D printing Star Trek replicators come to mind. Okay, you'll see it in today's archive, and you just click on that one, and you'll see a little hand phaser, you know, a little the first Star Trek hand phaser. This technology has so, and I wrote this, this technology has so much potential in the hands of imaginative youth that I will be updating this article for several weeks as a reference. The price of these 3D printers have come down to as low as $2,000. This means, now this is in August of 08, so this is like a year and a half ago. This means that mass production is about to be moved to individual home production of items using a free piece of software designed by anyone on the planet. You'll want to pay attention to this technology and start thinking about what it means. This information is just a taste. Watch for much more attention given this new technology. And then it shows a bunch of demos. I got links to demo 1, 2, 5. And what you'll look at it, and it's like an engine block. You know, it has all the parts. The valves, the rocker arm, the camshaft. You know, this, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And how they do it, there's several ways that they do it. But imagine a dot matrix printer. They made, you know, there's kids that have made this. They just changed the ink with certain kinds of plastic that harden, and they put them in their inkjet printers. I mean, just regular inkjet printer. And they will print and have the head that goes up, back and forth and up, and the platform lowers, and each pass puts another layer, another layer, another layer. You know, let it sit there for a few hours, and you built yourself a globe, I don't know, an engine head. Now you can change colors, you can change consistency. What it does do, at the very least, is it creates a positive for a mold. You know, you got a demo. You want to demonstrate something. All you got to do is be able to design it in a CAD system, and it prints it in 3D. And there's different kinds of 3D printing, too. I found that out. It's like three different kinds. He was a 15-year-old kid, and this is when I did this story. He was a 15-year-old kid that has his own business on the internet making one of things for, and you can do it with a laser scanner too. My sons work at Honeywell. They say, yeah, we do this all the time. They'll take a product, a part that sometimes, you know, somebody's got to make the part first. Either it's done in a computer or somebody's actually physically got to make it, you know, carve it out of clay, something. All right. And then they kind of refine it. They take and they put it on a scanning table, and lasers go, scan it with lasers, and then it just reproduces it. It replicates it and machines it out. There's all the coding and so on. All right. Well, where do you get the first one, you know, to make the metal? You know, a lot of times you got to test it first. You don't want to go through all this. You know, they just get some 15-year-old kid to do it on his CAD system in his jet printer. This means you, and $2,000? I can get all the little invention. I remember my father, when I was in grade school, he had that great invention. Now, this is an invention, man. He had to have an invention. This was because he always at work, he had the regular wall phones, you know, the regular phone that you have on the cradle, you know, ones that are on the desk, and then you had the wall version. I mean, this is back, you know, before deregulation of the phone company. You had two kinds of phones. You had the kinds that were on the table and the kind that was on the wall. Well, the ones that were on the wall, you know, where do you put the phone? It would never really stay up top. So he came up with this little plastic thing. First, he fabricated that aluminum metal and so on, and it just stuck to the side of the phone, and you just hung the phone up there just to hold it there while you went and got somebody or just to set it there. Made his life totally different. He was like, man, this is the greatest thing he made. You know, just got so irritated him so much that he just made this thing himself. Well, people thought it was cool, and they wanted to, you know, you should patent that. You got to invent it. You got to, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just to get the first prototype done, making the mold. It was cost prohibitive. It's just never going to happen. What do they do now? You just send your CAD system over to this kid, and he prints it out for you, sends it in the mail a couple of days. Or for $2,000, you can make them all day long. Oh, replicators already here.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Headlong down the highway, and you're rushing headlong out of control. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping, and you can't stop rocking. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, you can understand it. You know, we're rushing headlong out of control. And then you just, you open up your ultralight wing kind of thing, and you float up and let the car crash. You know, that was another James Bond thing. Remember that? Had in the boat, and that was the old one. Sean Connery did, just let it out there, boom. He goes, you thought I was going to crash, didn't you? Went over a waterfall. I have my own wings. I'm good. Now, this kind of stuff is happening now. They have this, it's $130,000 for this plane. It's a light plane, and it seats two, and it takes what they call a sport craft license. And it means you can pilot. You can take somebody with you. It takes about $3,000 to get the license to go through. It's not that big a deal, I guess. And the only problem, there's limitations on it. You can only go so far. They don't want you to go, you know, cross country or something. I thought that was kind of hosed up. But this one particular plane that they have, it's amphibious. It floats, and you can land with wheels. And you can go fishing, and you can go down as low as 40 miles an hour. And it's really sporty and looks cool and got GPS and everything. And I'm going, man, that is cool. I want to get me one of them. What happens when you're able to be autonomous off the grid? Technology gets where you live out in the Lone Prairie. I mean, do you have to have a road? Well, you know, they got dirigibles that are coming lighter than or heavier than airships. You know, that what they call lighter than airships, because they blimps, I guess. I wouldn't want to say blimp because they're not just airbags. I mean, they're actually, you have a rigid structure in them, and they're able to use them for communities that are out remote because they can carry a lot of weight. You know, it's like instead of having a 18-wheeler have to get to you, you get your own little dirigible. Then you have the ultralight planes. Then, of course, you got regular planes and helicopters and so on, but you got to keep this cheap. Yeah, do you have to have a road? They get to all kinds of autonomous, get you out there things. You know, one thing I was looking at the printer deal, and it came across something I was looking for before. And I'll put this up too on there. You go to freedomsphoenix.com, the top story. I just put it up. Today's archive show. You go to the bottom, and you'll have some of the stuff I was talking about. You just click on the link, and you can go see it. And this stuff is all over Freedom's Phoenix. We got hundreds of, 80,000. that we have of all these entries on all this different stuff. And sometimes you just hit the search engine and ask about anything. We got something up there that was cool. You go look at the categories. You know, we have content. You go to the archives at the horizontal bar up top, and the second thing, there's a drop down, and the second one says contents listed by subject. Well, you go look for things like energy, space travel, technology, gadgets. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. The off-grid living, anthropology, architecture. I don't put it up there unless it's cool or informative, or you need to know it. And it's timeless. I mean, this is at least it's marking history here. It's to be like a history book. It's like going to encyclopedia. And you're in eighth grade and you're looking for something, and you get so interested in all kinds of stuff, you forgot what you were looking for. It's on the internet. I went looking for some moment. I'm off in la la land. You just find things that interest you. And that's how we're learning now. You just put all that information out there, find all kinds of goodies on there. Well, one of the things is there was the Electronic Frontier Foundation is a libertarian organization that keeps track on technology. You know, what is the man doing with technology? Because I remember in the mid-90s, there was an effort to try and control computing, you know, the ability to access information and so on. And they went at it the wrong way because they were trying to control this kind of modem or that kind of hard drive or that kind of, you know, what kind of language are we going to use? We got to have a government demand. You got to use this kind. You got to, because you had Mac and Windows. You know, which one they can't communicate with each other? Well, we got to have them all the same. We got to have, you know, are we going to have beta and VHS? Are we going to have Blu-ray and HD DVD? Are we going to have, I mean, we got to have a standard. Got to have an industry standard. Well, in computers, they're going, you know, why? While they were trying to get industry standards of certain things, the technology was changing so fast that while they were regulating one type of transfer of information, they were four generations past that by the time they even got a bill written. You know, it was just stupid. So then they started getting into, you know, we're just going to regulate possession of certain information, not how you get it or how fast you got it, is that you have it. Now, then you start getting into, you know, censorship and so on and controls on the internet. And it's starting to get more sophisticated. They're just going to show their hand. And we just want to control what it is that you get access to and how you get it. And we get to determine it. Well, that kind of stuff is coming. Technology also allows you to, you know, you print stuff. You know, the Soviet Union, they didn't like technology for the same reasons. You know, you're able to relay information to other people. You're printing flyers and books. I had a guy named Milton Bearden on my show probably in the first year I was on. He was chief of the Eastern Bloc out of Germany before the wall fell. And it's all this old Cold War thing. And they wrote a book, The Enemy Yet to Get Something. I can't remember. And a guy named James Reardon, he was a, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning guy, and he got all kinds of kudos for supporting 9/11, their version in the government and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, so I have these guys on and they're, you know, slinging it. And finally, I didn't want to talk to the New York Times guy. I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to the CIA guy. And I'm going, look, what was the most effective things that you did? I mean, I'm thinking you just take the Declaration of Independence, print it in Russian, and just dump it all over the place. Man, that'd screw them up. You go, yep, that was our most effective means of espionage. Everything that we did, that was the most effective, just communicating directly with the people. That's what Air America was a Voice of America was all about. So I'm going, all right, cool. But they wanted to keep track of the documents that would come off certain printers. They were all about putting some kind of telltale sign on it, some kind of, you know, when it went off the roller, it marked it, it serial numbered it. We could tell where this came from because, gosh darn it, you can't have flyers out there without knowing who printed them. So we can go arrest them. What's the modern day version of that? Laser printers. Inkjets. Did you know that they have a code in every single page that comes off your color printer, or even black and white? Is your printer spying on you? Imagine that every time you printed a document, it automatically included a secret code that could be used to identify the printer and potentially the person who used it. Sounds like something from an episode of Alias? Unfortunately, this scenario isn't fictional. In a purported effort to identify counterfeiters, the U.S. government has succeeded in, yeah, it's always for, you know, something else. And, you know, if they were identifying counterfeiters, they go get the Federal Reserve. In persuading some color laser printer manufacturers to encode each page with identifying information. That means that without your knowledge or consent, an act you assume is private can become public. A communication tool you're using in everyday life could become a tool for government surveillance. And what's worse, there was no laws to prevent abuse. The ACLU recently issued a report revealing that the FBI has amassed more than 1,100 pages of documents on the organization since 2001, as well as documents concerning other nonviolent groups, including Greenpeace and United for Peace and Justice. In the current political climate, it is not hard to imagine the government using the ability to determine who may have printed what document for purposes other than identifying counterfeiters, blah, blah, blah. It goes on about that. Let me tell you how they did it. If you just printed out a white piece of paper, came out of your laser printer, you wouldn't see anything. I mean, you have to look really close. It's yellow dots. They're very, like, if you look under a certain light, you'll see these yellow little dots over in part of the paper down the corner, and you wouldn't know, but they didn't know what it meant, so they decoded it. If you go and you look at this, I'll put it up on the page and you'll see this. And you just go and see, do a search on Freedom of Speech. Is your printer spying on you? If you do a search on is your printer spying on you, it'll come up. Well, what they did is these yellow dots meant certain things. It gave a time, a date, the serial number of the machine. It had all kinds of stuff. So you got, by reading this, you got a date, time, and a serial number of the machine. That's all they needed. Because the serial number of the machine was identified to you when you use your credit card to buy it. So where did this come from? It came from this guy. When? On this day and this time. Well, that might be of value to somebody. I'd like to know. Hello. So we had Electronic Frontier Foundation guys on about this and saying, oh, man. Well, has this changed? Have they stopped this? Heck no. There's so much of this stuff that we saw coming. Do you remember Janet Reno and the Clinton administration? They wanted to, you ever hear the term clipper chip? You know what that was? That was a way of putting into your television, your fax machine, your computer, every bit of communication, something that would tell, that was accessible by the man to tell what you've been watching, what you've been sending. It was a way to eavesdrop on you. Now, what was the reason? You know, we need to have a clipper chip so parents have controls to stop porn to get to their kids and be able to whatever so that they can, oh, by the way, it's mandatory so we can have, and you must give us access. Then you're going, okay, yeah, we'll do it. We'll encrypt it. No, it's illegal. You can't encrypt it. Or you must give us the master key. This was 15 years ago. Where are we now? I just want you guys to be able to survive this. There's a good and bad to all technology. Always assume that the bad guys are doing the bad stuff because they can. And just be imaginative and, you know, hope that they just get out of the way so you can do the good stuff with whatever it is. But when it comes down to somebody accuses you of being an anarchist, just reply, compared to what? I mean, all this, I mean, my vote is no government and all this stuff just gets to flourish and I'll pick and choose and use vote with my dollars or you get to decide for me. It's not a very hard choice. See you tomorrow.